WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire, and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. President Biden says Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi has agreed to let up to 20 trucks carrying humanitarian aid to Gaza to pass through the Rafah border crossing.
Sisi deserves some real credit because he was very accommodating and, quite frankly, as everyone I have spoken to thus far since this trip began.
Israel's government press office reports more than 1,400 deaths since the war began, and the Gaza Health Ministry says at least 3,400 people have died. President Biden said during his trip to Israel that Israel was not responsible for an explosion at a hospital that killed hundreds, and that an errant rocket fired from a terrorist group in Gaza caused it. CBS's MTS Taieb has more from East Jerusalem.
The explosion and its deadly aftermath has triggered a fury across the Middle East not seen in years. In Beirut, thousands demonstrated outside the U.S. embassy while President Biden was in neighboring Israel, where he said the Israeli military was not to blame. But from the streets of Tehran to even war-torn Yemen, few here believe the president and say Israel is squarely responsible for the explosion, as well as the widespread misery unfolding in Gaza.
An intelligence bulletin warns that terror groups are calling on supporters to target U.S. nationals and Israelis. The warnings came while President Biden was in Tel Aviv to reaffirm U.S. solidarity with Israel as the conflict with Hamas continues. More from CBS's Catherine Herridge in Washington.
CBS News has reviewed a State Department cable which requires all diplomatic posts to convene their Emergency Action Committee, or EAC. This is significant because these committees are responsible for crisis management at U.S. posts. The cable is another indicator of the volatile threat environment.
After a second vote, there is still no U.S. House Speaker. Republican Congressman Jim Jordan wants the gavel, and he says he plans to stay in the race. A third vote is scheduled for tomorrow. Congressman Jordan saying,
"I picked up some today, a couple dropped off, but they voted for me before. I think they can come back again. So we'll keep talking to members."
Fewer needy families will be able to get free groceries, KCBS's Matt Bigler explains.
Broccoli?
Pop-up food pantries that started during the pandemic have been a godsend for seniors like Maureen.
Oh, I think they've helped tremendously. You go to the grocery store and everything's so expensive.
But these distribution sites will close for good by the middle of 2025. San Francisco Food Bank Executive Director Tanis Crosby says many charities are seeing a gradual decrease in state, local, and federal funding.
So there's a significant amount of pandemic era funding and resources that have gone away.
Matt Bigler for CBS News, San Francisco.
This is CBS News.
You need to hire? Indeed is with you every step of the way, helping you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Did you know that feeling?
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has announced more than $134 million in quarterly aid payments for local roads and communities. The funds are meant to assist local governments complete transportation-related projects and make up nearly a third of the state's transportation budget. Over $131 million of the funding will go to local governments, with over $3 million going to 116 eligible municipalities for connecting highways and another $250,000 going to expressway policing in Milwaukee County. The man charged with bringing a gun to the Wisconsin Capitol on two occasions in the same day was arrested again last night. 43-year-old Joshua Pleasnik was charged with carrying a concealed weapon and was booked in the Dane County Jail. Earlier this month, Pleasnik was charged with bringing a loaded handgun into the Capitol while looking for Governor Tony Evers, then returning to the Capitol after posting bail with an assault-style rifle. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Buck Tussle has been providing high-speed internet to rural Wisconsin before it was cool. Now we're celebrating the company and the bug that started it all. In honor of our mascot, Buford's birthday, and the anniversary of our company, we are giving new customers free service until 2024, and 5 current customers will win $1,000 each. For more details and to get Buck Tussle internet today, call 877-227-0924. That's 877-227-0924.
Have you noticed bad behavior has become normalized at interscholastic athletic events? Some fans seem angry. They lack civility toward one another. Some even get aggressive and unruly. Time out! What is going on? This has to stop. Let's not forget, school sports aren't just about winning. And they're definitely not an excuse to take your frustrations out on the official or the opponent. They're about teaching lessons like perseverance, respect, and empathy, so students can learn and grow as people, not just as players. We all have a role to play in setting a good example for our students and teaching them these important values. So fans, it's time to step up your game and behave positively at interscholastic athletic events in Wisconsin.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute. Weekdays from 4 until 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. It's what's on tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5 The Tap.
And I thought China wasn't doing anything about climate change. I'm starting to feel like we've been lied to. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, as we've been talking about all across the country, you're seeing workers finally going, hey, enough already. We came out of the pandemic. We're heroes. We're frontline heroes. We're essential. We're all those things. Now pay us like that. And this is what people are taking to the streets over. In fact, I was just reading an article out of Mississippi. Jackson, Mississippi, you got General Motors workers evidently on strike down there. I didn't even know they were down there. They're saying, look, we gave up all this stuff back in 2008 when the company went bankrupt. We gave up overtime after 8 hours. We gave up all this stuff so that this company could come back and prosper. And guess what? They have. Now it's time for us, and we're not budging until we get what we earn. And I think that's really a great message and something that as an entire working class across this country, maybe we should be internalizing. But that's why I've asked Raymond Jensen to come talk with us. He's the assistant director of UAW Region 9. Raymond, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. I truly appreciate it.
So walk me through where we are. I mean, I look at the big three right now. We're over a month now into this. There have been stories of progress. In fact, a lot of progress that more than anyone, I think, thought you were going to get, especially at the beginning. Where are we?
Yeah, so it seemed, Stellantis was going to be the difficult one when opening negotiations. It seems like they're willing to deal. You know, Ford made some forward progress until the discussion of the EV battery plants came in, and then they just kind of dug their heels in. Thus, the reason Kentucky truck plant went out. And GM is dug in, and it seems like they're ready to just try to wait us out. And they think that our membership is not going to stand up for what they believe in, but they got another thing coming.
Now, this is one of those moments, someone asked me how long I think it'll take. And I said, I think it's going to take as long as it's going to take, simply because, the people that I spoke to see that this is kind of, one of the last opportunities to be able to ensure that the future is going to be a union future, that these jobs of the future are going to be UAW jobs as this transition happens. So a lot of the people that I spoke to, they're keenly aware that this is an opportunity to influence their future. So I don't know how long it's going to take, but I go back to what I said. It's going to take what it takes.
It's going to take as long as it takes. I agree with you. And I saw a comment online from somebody, one of the striking workers somewhere, and they said, we'll deep fry turkeys, we'll cut down Christmas trees and bring them to the strike line. Whatever we got to do, we're out here for the fight. And like I've said always from the beginning, our membership is fired up and ready to go. And this is our time. We're not looking to be millionaires. We're just looking to make a fair day's pay for a fair day's work.
Yeah, as I always say, working people, they're not out to look at, make a killing. They're just out to make a living. It's really that simple. Now, what I find interesting is everybody that I talk to who's against the members being on strike always point to two main things. A 32-hour work week and a 40% raise. They just think that this is, it's unconscionable that you would ask for such a thing. I think it's important that you push the bounds of the possible. I'm curious what you're hearing.
Absolutely. You know, there was a recent poll done. 91% of America is on our side, which has gone up from, I believe, 77% last time. I find it ironic that the people that don't want to pay us a 40% wage increase are the same people that got a 40% raise increase over the last 4 years, the CEOs. You know, the 32-hour work week for 40 hours pay, if COVID has done anything, it's work-life balance. You know, a lot of those people that work in the offices, they work from home when COVID hit, and they're still working from home. Understand that we can't do our jobs from home, but there needs to be a work-life balance. We don't need to be in the factory 70, 80, 90 hours a week, 7 days a week on critical status for 90 days in a row and can't take a day off. That's unacceptable.
Wow, sure you do. That's how they make their profit.
Yeah, I mean, Ford just, did a $600 million stock buyback today or yesterday, came out in the news today. I mean, come on, what are we doing, right? You don't have any more money to give, but yet you're making sure your shareholders and everybody else and your executives are taken care of. So it's ridiculous. It's disgusting. And just pay us what we're worth and everything that's been taken away from us over since 2008. That's all we're looking for.
You know, you brought up the stock buybacks, and you know, this is one of my pet peeves. Because, you know, we're told we have to give these companies all these tax breaks. We have to give them, you know, all these sweeteners and we have to give them all this money to keep them afloat because, you know, it'll trickle down. Eventually, it'll trickle down to us. And yet these stock buybacks are them admitting that they have all this money, all of this profit, and not a lick of productive use for it other than making themselves richer. They can't build new facilities. They can't invest in new models or lines or workers. They can't pay better. Nope, can't do any of that. We've just got to make our share price higher so that we get richer.
And you're exactly right. And if you listen to any time the CEO, Jim Farley's been the one that's been most vocal for Ford. But all he talks about is our customers, our business, nothing about the workers. We don't have to protect the workers. We don't have to protect, you know, anything other than their pockets and their economy. The only economy we're going to wreck is the billionaire class. I mean, I don't have stock buybacks. I don't have that option. I'm just trying to work for a living.
Now, you know, I also see that, you know, we talked about this last week. You know, they went on strike at Mack Truck. In fact, you know, we're going to make our way down there in the next several days. They had an agreement. They had a tentative agreement. The membership said, nope, not enough. Go back and do it again. You know, redo your homework and bring it back to us again. What's going on at Mack right now?
Yeah, so President Fain actually came down for a visit to the Mack Truck Mukunji facility. He went to the Hagerstown facility and met with the membership and just wanted to hear from them, like, what are the issues? Let us know, you know, and the organizing department had everybody fill out cards, like a survey type card when they signed up for their strike benefits, asking them, what were your top four demands? What is it that you want to see? And it was the 8.5-hour day in Mukunji. It was GWI, gross wage increase, COLA. And they just want, you know, to make a fair living. They just want, you know, not to be left behind. Volvo, their parent company, AB Volvo, has made $49 billion last year. So there's money to go around. And I'm glad that the membership voted it down by 73% because now they've enabled the bargaining team to go in there and tee off on them and say, hey, if we're all family, your membership is spoke. So take care of your family.
Yeah, well, you're the other side of town, family.
We're the side that we never see.
Yeah, you're the side that doesn't get invited to the picnics. Which, you know, I got to tell you, you know, when we were out in Toledo and we were walking the Stellantis picket line, the Jeep picket line there, you know, they have this racetrack, this like kind of Jeep track, you know, with all kind of, you know, weird, you know, boulders and stuff for the Jeeps to run over. And the guy said they don't do that anymore because they used to have picnics and they used to have professional drivers come out to drive the Jeeps. And it was a really cool kind of family day, kind of, you know, solidarity building day between the company and the union. And they cut that out, you know, several years ago. And it was just another one of those things where you go, the division just keeps getting wider and wider between the corporate executives and the wealthy and, well, the people who do the work and create the wealth.
Right. And they seem to forget that without the workers, they wouldn't have this generational wealth that they have. I mean, their next 2, 3, 4 generations are taken care of. We have members that are struggling week to week that can't even pay their bills. When we went to opening negotiations and Stellantis, the COO, had the nerve to say that there's an attendance problem in our facilities, you know, and Sean said, well, you pay them $16.67 an hour. What do you expect? And he said, well, they could get a side hustle. A lot of our members like having a side hustle. And we're just like, are you kidding me right now? This man has more money than he knows what to do with. And he's saying that our members should get a second job because they like it.
So what's his second job?
His second job is living in his second vacation home in Acapulco, Mexico, wearing $40,000 watches.
Not a bad gig, I guess, if you can get it. I know I haven't been able to. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Raymond Jensen. Raymond's the assistant director of UAW Region 9. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at the work that they do there. I also understand potentially another strike on the horizon, this time up in Scranton, Pennsylvania at the General Dynamics. Tell me what's going on there.
Yeah, so they have a facility in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. We represent the one in Pennsylvania. It's the same story. They're just far apart. The company's trying to make regressive offers with their healthcare, with their wages. And the workers have just said, not anymore. This is our time, you know, and they're standing up for what they believe in. Their contract expires at midnight on Sunday. But from all my understanding, they're pretty far apart. So if they walk on Sunday, it'll be our sixth strike in the region.
I mean, the UAW, I gotta give you guys credit. You know, you're striking all over the place. There are a bunch of spots where you, because look, I think you're right. People have had enough and people are ready to take on the fight. And I still think corporate America thinks it's 2019.
Yeah. And they're so far out of touch with reality. It's just corporate greed, right? I mean, if you look at our wages in the last 4 years, they've gone up a total of 6%. I mean, inflation is what it is, right? But every contract since 1947 has had COLA in there until 2007 or 8 when it was frozen. It was just frozen. It wasn't taken away. So they want to say how, you know, a certain president is causing inflation to go through the roof and, you know, and that's why everybody's falling behind. But every UAW contract since 1947 has had it in there. So we don't want to hear it anymore. Just pay us what we're worth for a fair day's pay. And this movement is hot. The labor movement is hot. It's not just the UAW. Take a look across the country. The culinary workers, the nurses, the Teamsters were about ready to walk. It's everybody.
And as I've been saying, you want to reunite this country, you got to reunionize it. Get people back out onto that picket line. Get them back out fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities for themselves and their families. This is what we should be doing. And the work that you guys are doing is really incredible. And look, you know, I was just reading an article about Sean Fain. And, you know, this new generation of labor leader, the kind of people that I've been saying we've been needing for a very long time. But here's the thing, and this is where, you know, you could say what you want about Sean Fain or Sean O'Brien or any of the more vocal leaders. They can only be who they are because they got a membership behind them that's willing to put them out in front and give them that opportunity because of the power in numbers. And I think that needs to be remembered.
Absolutely. And when Sean was in Mukunji, he stressed to the membership, I work for you. You know, everybody couldn't believe that he came down there to see them. And he's like, I work for you, you know, and the fact that you guys voted it down and the fact that you guys handed in those cards, I think Mukunji has around 2,500 people. We got around 2,300 cards turned in and everybody just voiced their concerns. And Sean was like, that's what we want to hear. This is what we want to know. You are the ultimate body of this membership or this union. You are the highest ranking authority. So when you speak, send the bargaining team back. It's okay. Don't worry about it. We're going to go back and we're going to fight for you. We hear you. And that was his message to the membership.
There you go. Well, I wish you guys the best. I hope I see you on one of the picket lines here soon. As I tell people all the time, find a picket line, adopt a striker, go out, walk with them, bring them a bottle of water, a cup of coffee, a donut, something, drop a buck into the strike fund. But for a day, be a striker, be out there and adopt the folks and find out exactly why they're there. But Raymond, I appreciate you taking some time, sharing your thoughts, and I wish you the best, brother.
If I could just give a cheap plug. So Saturday the 21st at Langhorne, PA, our GM Parts Distribution Center, we're having a huge rally out there. So if anybody's in the area and wants to stop by, the flyer's on our social media. It starts at noon. I believe the Senators, Fetterman and Casey are going to be there. Or they're going to try to be there. If not, their staff will be there. But yeah, anybody's welcome to stop by and see those folks and just walk the picket line with them and hear their stories.
There you go. Good stuff, Raymond. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Over the weekend, looking forward to getting out to Toledo to see the striking workers out at the Jeep plant. Also going to spend a little time with our friends at the Dropkick Murphys. Going to sit down with an interview with Ken Casey. We'll bring that to you next week. Looking forward to that. Get to see them in concert. And we're gonna for the weekend adopt strikers and get out there on the picket line. Also on Monday, we're going to be making a big announcement about the future of the program, where we're heading, what the next several months holds for us. I'm excited about the future, and I've got some news that, depending on where you are, you're going to be either happy or sad, but it's going to move, I think, in a positive direction. So Monday, once we've made all the notifications and signed all the different things and dotted the I's and crossed the T's and put the periods at the ends of the sentences, we've got some big news. So you'll want to tune in Monday for that. Want to make sure that happens. Now the big election season coming up. We're only a couple of weeks away from our November elections, and Ohio is, I think all eyes are on Ohio as the abortion issue is front and center. Also, Ohio's got legal marijuana on the ballot. So I'm assuming, as Baldwin Wallace University is, that the abortion rights amendment gonna pass. Their most recent poll says it's gonna pass. If it were held today, 58-34, 8% undecided. You got to think that they're probably going to break 50-50. So Ohio could be a woman's choice state. And you throw in there all the stuff that goes with that, making sure that women have the ability to make their own reproductive decisions, not just limited to abortion, but contraception, fertility treatments, pregnancy, miscarriages, all of that stuff that you now don't have to, come up with a legal defense. You know, we're 20 days away from the election? So Ohio, all eyes are on you. Got to get out there and vote. Now, what's interesting is this is the abortion issue is something that across the country breaks on the side of making Roe legal. The majority of the country didn't want Roe upended. And I find it interesting that Donald Trump has been running new ads out in Iowa, taking credit for destroying Roe, because look, it was him who did it. He wants credit for it, and I'm willing to give him credit for it. He's the one who put the justices in that court. Now, granted, he didn't choose them. The Federalist Society did, but he's still the guy who puts his name on it, and his ads are declaring him the most pro-life president in history. I don't know about that. I don't know about that. Let's agree to disagree. But yeah, he's the guy who packed the Supreme Court. And now we're finding out all the fun and entertainment coming out of the Supreme Court. You've got, you know, all the stuff around Clarence Thomas. And what I found interesting is Clarence Thomas's pet billionaire, Harlan Crow, evidently maxed out contributions to independent presidential candidate Cornel West, which you go, huh? Why would a right-wing billionaire, a Republican mega donor, make a contribution to a progressive activist running for president as independent, especially someone like Cornel West? Could it be he just likes black men? I don't know. Not going there. Or could it be more likely he's just trying to take votes from Joe Biden? And I don't know why Cornel West is running. I still haven't figured out what the point is, but evidently he knows what most Democrats know. Chances are he's going to take some votes away from Biden. He's going to help Trump, and he's not worried about it. He says doesn't think that it'll be the case. Says he can't imagine 4 more years of Biden as president would be much better. And you know, you just got to go, okay. He seems to think that we're headed for World War III on one side or a civil war on the other. The thing that I find interesting, and as I hear this a lot from the folks on the right, that somehow Trump is going to stop World War III. Yeah, the second civil war is probably going to happen, but we'll stop World War III. And I'm going, I don't quite know how Trump's appeasement would do that, because if you remember, the reason that Putin didn't invade Ukraine is Trump was like, yeah, go ahead, do whatever you want. What do we care? The reason that, you know, he met with Kim Jong-un and nothing, you know, bad happened is basically gave Un all the attention that he wanted. And look, I think Trump understood that. But you were never going to move him to be an ally. You were never going to stop them from pursuing their nuclear ambitions. You were just stoking his ego, and something Trump understands. And what I found interesting is Trump was talking about how China has now, you know, taken, you know, control of all these places around the globe. He said, you know, we spent all this money on buying our friends, and China's gone in and taken Brazil and, you know, all these places. And you go, no. No, the reason China's been able to do this didn't happen because of Joe Biden. This happened because of you, Donald Trump. This happened because you walked away from foreign entanglements. You walked away from foreign policy. You walked away from the things that those countries needed at the time that they needed. So they went to somebody else. And all of the talk of, you know, in 2010 and to right now, you know, we give all this money to foreign countries. Yeah. And Trump is right on this, to buy their allegiance, to make their places worth living in so people don't come here. Yeah, we've understood that for a very long time. But those 4 years when Trump was president, all that stuff stopped. So what do you think then happens? Yeah, they go to the next one. That's pretty simple. Interesting little bit of information here. Evidently, and remember, conservatives love to tell us how fiscally responsible they are. They love to tell us how they can solve our tax problems and our debt problems. It's odd because they can't even really solve their own. And I look at Newt Gingrich. Do you remember when he ran for president back in 2012? What year is it again? Oh yeah, 2023. So 11 years ago he ran for president. He still owes $4.63 million to creditors for that failed presidential campaign. And they're, from what I understand, probably not going to pay it. But this is the most of any presidential campaign from the past election cycle, from any past election cycle. No other presidential campaign from any cycle owes more. And remember, this is the guy who was, he was fiscally responsible. He gets credit for Bill Clinton balancing the budget. Yeah, not going to pay his own bills. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Download the podcast and subscribe and never miss a moment. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day that Paul Robeson received the Spingarn Medal from the NAACP. The award was given annually to the African-American with the highest achievement. Robeson certainly fit that criteria. He was born in Princeton, New Jersey. He attended Rutgers University, where he was an athletic standout and valedictorian. He earned his law degree from Columbia. He was a successful singer, as well as stage and film actor. He was also an internationally recognized star, with singing engagements all around the world. Robeson strongly supported labor and working people. He was also an outspoken critic of U.S. colonialism. His stand for social justice made him a target of Senator Joe McCarthy during the hysteria of the Cold War Red Scare. Because of his alleged communist ties, in 1950, Robeson's passport was revoked. It took him 8 years to get it reissued. During that time, he could not travel abroad to perform. The International Union of Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers invited Robeson to sing at their Canadian convention in 1952. Since he could not travel, he sang over the telephone. The union then organized a concert on the Washington State-Canadian border. Standing on a flatbed truck parked on the U.S. side of the border, Robeson gave a 45-minute performance to a crowd of 40,000 people. He started the concert by saying, quote, "I stand here today under great stress because I dare, as do you, all of you, to fight for peace and for a decent life for all men, women, and children." Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and the Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free?
If the Democratic Party wants a big, hot issue that would force the GOP to admit its disdain for democracy, how about those Supremes? The Supreme Court, intended to be an apolitical, neutral arbiter of legal cases brought before it, has been elevated to a supreme legislative body by the six-person majority of extreme right-wing partisans now controlling our third branch of government. I'm hardly a legal scholar, unless you count my week and a half in law school, but you don't have to be in who's who to know what's what. From my lifetime in politics, I can attest that what these Republican judges are doing is pure politics, using their black robes as cover for flagrant political activism, coordinating surreptitiously with right-wing ideologues and corporate money powers that shower favors on them. They intentionally bring up case after case designed to rewrite America's laws. These six aloof judges are effectively enacting a new political order of plutocratic, autocratic, and theocratic power over the beliefs and democratic will of America's pluralistic majority. Posing as conservative jurists, they've steadily concentrated arbitrary lawmaking power in their own hands. Reaching way beyond the court's constitutional role of deciding cases, today's Supremes now effectively create law by choosing cases to bring up, favoring those fabricated by such right-wing political allies as the Koch brothers and the Federalist Society. Moreover, the six partisans even rule on legal questions the case doesn't raise, simply making up and answering their own question. This is Jim Hightower saying, with no legal, ethical, or electoral checks on this secretive, anti-democratic government, the court now routinely rules against workers, women, civil rights, the environment, personal liberties, and, well, against America. Shouldn't we have at least one political party calling them out and reining in their arrogance?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, yeah, I got to tell you, I love this. Evidently, Mitt Romney's got a book coming out where he told the author that Oprah had suggested that the two of them marry up and join in together for a unity presidential ticket back in 2022. To stop Trump's reelection. Now, what's being reported is a source familiar with Winfrey's thinking said she was never serious about running, but, you know, the thought crossed her mind. It wasn't serious. Yeah, wasn't serious. Do you think she would have won? I don't, but hey, you know. We will never know. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio Congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thank you, Rick.
So, what do you think? Oprah-Romney ticket? You think that would have done well in 2020?
They considered it. I think they did. Look, anytime somebody, this is how it started with me, somebody coming saying, you know, you can be the speaker. We just need to neutralize Tom DeLay, and his best friend is Jack Abramoff. Let's get close to Jack. Okay? So, yeah, I thought, yeah, maybe I could be speaker. So I think probably at one point, look, if you're confronted with that idea and you want to stop Donald Trump, they had to have thought about it, yeah. You know? Didn't go anywhere. But they had to have thought about it.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. I don't know that I would have voted for an Oprah.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, yeah, I want somebody who at least has some idea. I don't know of how government works. I think we, you know, with the reality star TV president we had just a minute ago, it didn't go well.
Yeah, but it would have been Oprah. Well, wait a minute. It would have been Oprah and Mitt against
Trump.
Trump, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the thing I thought, and I miscalled this one, and I said it on your show, when Trump got elected, I'm always suspicious of people that used to come in my office and, I'm a businessman, I'm not a politician, can you support me running for Congress? And I would say, well, then why are you running if you're not a politician? That's the scariest thing.
Yeah.
I'm not in politics. Then that's usually terrifies me. The thing about Trump is he had no knowledge of government, period.
That's
but,
it.
You know, I thought, with Pence, I called it wrong. I thought he's going to rely on Pence. I just didn't realize the level of narcissism. Yeah. But he's going to rely on Pence. Pence can make those trains run. Donald Trump does the out front face stuff and attacks who he wants. And, you know, Pence makes the government run. And, of course, he got in there, and Pence must have made him mad the first day. You know, and that was it.
No, and thank goodness you were wrong. I had thought the same thing. I had thought that, you know, mm-hmm. you know, if Pence gets his way, you know, because Trump, I always believed Trump just wanted to do the Rose Garden signings and, you know, wanted his picture taken and you know, patted on the head and told what a great job he was doing, make everybody else do the work, but him take credit for it. But, you know, fortunately, you know, you're right. You know, Pence wasn't the guy in charge.
Right. I've seen it tons of times. Look, we have some really great, smart members, both sides of the aisle I serve with. But I also saw members where you ask them to move a glass of water across the table, they're going to struggle. But they had chiefs of staff and consultants who were, you know, sharp as could be, made them look good, you know, got them out of their mistakes, and the rest is history. But Trump, like I said, Pence must have done something wrong or didn't compliment him the first week, something.
Could have been. Or just, you know, Trump always had women around him. And, you know, You know, Pence can't be around women without Mama there, so that was a cheap shot. Yeah. That's not entirely wrong.
You're right.
So let's move on to the big story of the day. Still no speaker. Surprised?
Okay. Well, I'm going to segue on cheap shots and make some here.
By all means.
I got some messages yesterday, and they were from friends around the country. Jordan's going to make it the second ballot. And I said, no. Look at Diaz-Balart, okay? He's a congressman from Florida, right? Known him really well when I was in Congress. And I read between the lines on something the other day. All he said in the press report, because he kept his powder dry on this, I think, for the truth, but all he said in the press report is, you know, bullying doesn't work with me.
Right.
And I've known him long enough. As soon as I read that, Rick, somebody tried the whole, not just on him, but on others, tried the whole bully tactic, right?
Right.
So he didn't vote for Jordan first run. And what that tells me is a certain amount of people that didn't like Jordan were probably pushed around, and it set him over the edge. So round two, he loses two more votes. Well, guess what? Does he think, does he actually think this is a wrestling game where you go to the mat three or four different matches? You know, I got to throw that in there.
Yeah, yeah, especially when you can touch little boys, yeah.
Right. So this is not that type of deal, and the end result is going to be he's done. He's done. If he could even win, he will make McCarthy look like a long-term speaker. Seriously.
So how many Scaramucci's would he be able to be speaker for then?
Yeah. That's the other thing, too, is that they're comparing this to McCarthy going 15 rounds, not the same deal. McCarthy didn't tend to lose on round two, and it took him 15 rounds. This guy's already lost to meet people. You also know, you've been in politics long enough, you also know there's going to be closed-door meetings, tempers are going to fly, there's going to be threats made, and to be frank with you, in politics, it may not even be where Jordan's people make political threats. It might be somebody else makes them, and Jordan's blamed for it. So I can't see where this goes anywhere.
Yeah. No, I love the fact that Nancy Pelosi came out and said, you know, maybe they should learn math. I love the fact that she still got that little shot in there. Because I don't know why you would bring this to the floor knowing you didn't have the votes. You knew you didn't have the votes.
Well, I think I can answer that, actually. The Jordan people, this is my theory on this only, the Jordan people sat there and said, you know, the longer this goes, more controversy, blah, blah, blah. We're going to take this to the floor. Members are going to be terrified to not have a speaker, and we're going to be able to turn those votes through sheer pressure on the floor. That's exactly where I think they were at.
No, I'm sure of that.
I really do.
No, I'm sure that's it.
Yeah, because they shouldn't. You're right. You don't. You know, one of the reasons that Pelosi was successful and basically Gingrich in his time was because they didn't take things to the floor that they really didn't have the votes for. It was rare, you know. They would do the vote counting. If they didn't have the votes, guess what? You adjust, right? Not this group. They didn't have the votes, so they go full steam ahead. So whoever his advisors were, they should have counted before they went.
Yeah.
And if they didn't have the votes, they should have waited.
Now, here's the thing, and this is the question I've been waiting to ask you because, you know, the bullying thing has come up. You know, Jim Jordan's, and everyone knows Jordan's a bully. That's all he's got. He's not a legislator. He's never written a piece of legislation that's been passed. Hasn't even got one through a committee. So he's a destroyer. That's what he is. But, you know, if you're going to be a bully, you've got to be able to have something to bully with. No, I mean, you take money away. He's not a big fundraiser, I guess, so he doesn't have that. Committee assignments, you know, whatever horse trading you're doing, you got to have some ability to exact some pain if you're bullying. I just don't see him having any of that.
Right. You know, after his, you know, second failed attempt, I think that they're starting to realize, probably the Jordan people and maybe himself, that he lost more supporters and it was because of bullying and because the fact that he has this, you know, chip on his shoulder now. And when he, as I understand it from within that caucus, when he lost to Scalise, he gave some type of, and even friends aren't talking about exactly what was said, but he gave one of the most horrible kind of concession speeches you could have given, you know? If he was smart, he might have thought, Scalise may not make it. I'm going to be a gentleman. I'm going to do it. He didn't. And they, I guarantee you, they have done such bullying since that first vote, and now it's backfired, and it's going to backfire more. That's exactly what's going to happen.
So he's, in my view, he's out. Who's next?
He's done. I can't imagine. Now, here's the other thing. You just raised a really good point about the money. We can, you know, well, you know what I'm about to say, but we have people in the country that say, you know, you don't need this money. It's just, it's a matter of what you believe and it's a matter of what you vote. And, well, unfortunately, in American politics, it is a matter of money. You know, money is the mother's milk of American politics. And you have to have people that can raise money. One thing about McCarthy, McCarthy could raise money. And it's because McCarthy wasn't viewed as by, you know, some of the people who contribute. They're not going to like Jordan. They're going to be afraid of Jordan. They don't want anything to do with him. They're not going to contribute. He's not going to be an effective money raiser. He will raise money by people that want to, you know, undo the government, or by people that want to put, you know, Biden in prison. He'll raise money from that sector. But Jordan can't raise in a broad base that McCarthy even could. So he's got that going against him. And so when he stands there and says, you know, I'm not part of the money system, that should also send a shockwave to the Republicans.
Yeah. No, because they need it. Because if things continue, you know, I think, you know, next election cycle, they get swept out.
Oh, I said this about a week and a half ago when you and I were talking on your show. If they didn't, they needed, let me put it this way, they needed round one to elect a speaker. They needed it. Now they've got round two. If they think they can go round after round and then elect a speaker who's thrown out again, right now, in my comparison to them, I remember exactly what I said on your show. They're in intensive care. They're laying there in the hospital bed. The plug is halfway out the wall for the ventilator. That's where the Republicans in the House stand today.
Well, we'll see how this plays out. So I got to go back to the question. Who next? Since, you know,
okay,
Jordan's out. Scalise didn't make it. They can't bring McCarthy back. That would look like a surrender. Is this going to be the bow tie guy? Is he going to get some longer powers? Where are we going?
That's it. That's what I said. Don't laugh. But yes, I think Patrick McHenry, the bow tie guy, who I've known for a long time. Yes, he is. He has to be, I think, the compromise. He's sitting there. Now, there's a second path here, which is fascinating. If they don't pick a speaker, then actually for public policy, we're going to be a better country, to be honest with you, because in order to do anything, the Republicans, not the crazy crazes, but the Republicans would have to have Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats go along with certain things to put coalitions together, not to make a speaker, but to do public policy, right?
Right.
So that could be an option one, but then you're still sitting without technically a speaker. I think if the Republicans were smart, they probably would just go with McHenry with a deal that McHenry will not run again after the elections, not for office, but for speaker.
Right.
That's what I would do.
No, it's an interesting thing because, you know, earlier someone said, you know, if we have a 9/11 type thing, you know, can we get funding through? And that's an interesting question. You know, how would we respond to a crisis? I mean, the president is requesting money for Ukraine and Israel. The House is where the money is supposed to come from. Who's he requesting it from?
Right. Well, they would have to work together to do something in a crisis, but that's not the way to run you know, government of crisis to crisis with a temporary speaker. It's just not the way to do it. Now, here's the other thing. This makes Matt Gaetz and the band of eight other people so out there. If you truly believe, if somebody listening to this show truly believes that Matt Gaetz is right, and I don't think anybody listening thinks that, but let's say hypothetically that he's right and we got to stop the Democrats and they're ruining the budget, blah, 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 then why on earth would you support Matt Gaetz shutting down the government and basically handing the House to Hakeem Jeffries next election?
Yeah.
See, this, none of this is making logical political sense. None of it. So I think it's individual craziness and, you know, the lack of some cushion votes. But then when you go back to it, Nancy Pelosi only had three votes for a cushion. Am I not right?
You're correct. And we didn't see this kind of dysfunction out of her.
She made it work.
Because she was a fundraiser, man. And I go back to what I said. She had the carrots and the sticks. That Jordan doesn't have.
She knew what battles to do,
yep.
And she knew what battles she couldn't do. And so therefore, yeah. Plus, Nancy Pelosi, and I served with her, she just would stand up and say, you know, here's where we need to be. She had some detractor after her, some detractors at first, doing sit-ins in her office, et cetera. You know, she didn't go out and try to eliminate them. She just worked around them. And that's not what Jim Jordan does. He goes straight through. You know, he doesn't try to work around anything. That's why he's done.
Yeah, good. I'm glad to hear it. Finally, got to get your thoughts on we're days away. I mean, we're just ticking down. What the potential shutdown again? We need a spending bill, right? That's we kicked that what 45 days. Takes us to what middle of November, I guess, just before
November 17th. If my memory serves me right, November 17th.
Yeah, middle of November. So we're less than a month away from that. Chances of having a speaker by then.
And it takes a process, you know, to do this. Well, again, if in a way, I'm going to look at this a little bit different, I guess. If we don't have a speaker by then, there will most likely be a better chance of a broader coalition of, let's say, you know, 100 some Democrats and 115 some Republicans, let's say, whatever. There's probably a better chance of a coalition of that occurring under a crisis combined with what's going on with Israel and the Ukraine, probably.
Interesting.
Now, that's no reason to not have a speaker, but it would probably have an easier time of it. If you get a new speaker and Matt Gaetz and the band of seven others pull a McCarthy on them, then you probably are going to have they're going to have a rough time to get a spending bill.
I love that McCarthy is now a verb.
Well, they're you know, if you ever want to take anybody out, you're pulling a McCarthy on them.
There you go. That is brilliant.
I don't want to say you're pulling a Gaetz on him because I don't want to give his name credit.
No.
You're pulling a McCarthy.
Yeah. You take a Gaetz. You pull a McCarthy.
Right. Pull a McCarthy. That's it.
There you go. Oh, that's brilliant. But Bob, as always, I appreciate the time. Good stuff, man.
Thank you, Rick.
Our good friend Bob Ney. I mean that it actually makes sense. I mean, if we don't get a speaker, maybe we don't have a ticking bomb before Thanksgiving. I gotta rethink this. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, and we're going all the way back to 1648. More than 100 years before the American Revolution, an early trade organization was founded in the colony of Massachusetts. They called themselves the Company of Shoemakers. Shoemakers were considered skilled craftsmen, yet changes in how shoes were made threatened their craft. The shoemakers were particularly concerned about low-skilled workers driving down wages. They formed their guild in an effort to protect their trade. This has been the basis for much of the trade union movement. The guild members argued that they were stopping, quote, the damage which the country sustains by occasion of bad wear. They wanted to set a quality standard for their industry. To ensure that standard, they set up an apprentice system by which new workers could learn their craft under the instruction of an established shoemaker. Nearly four centuries later, we hear similar declarations from union electricians, carpenters, and plumbers. Recognizing and promoting the professionalism and the skill of their craft is an important function for trade unions. Yet there were some differences between that early shoemaker's guild and today's labor movement. One of the most notable was the names for official duties in the guild. Instead of president or secretary treasurer, the shoemakers of Boston included titles such as a searcher, a warden, and a beadle. Another difference is that the Massachusetts colony outlawed the guild from, quote, fixing prices. So the guild could promote the quality of their work, but could not organize for specific wages. The skilled shoemakers were some of the earliest workers to organize together. Today's labor movement continues to walk in their shoes.
These boots are made for walking.
Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind? Email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. So again, mark your calendars. Monday, got a special announcement coming up. I want to make sure that we're tuned in for that. Some interesting news. Evidently, X, formerly known as Twitter, Elon Musk has gone and he's doing some new advertising stuff. Some new stuff on his platform. That they're saying is a bit misleading and could run afoul of Federal Trade Commission rules. But hey, you know, he's Mr. Free Speech. Evidently, there's going to be no way to report it. There's no way to block it. There's no way to do any of this. According to the report that users were noticing a new type of advertisement minus a regular handle or username. And the ad's headline, you know, looked like a normal tweet with the avatar, a miniature of whatever the featured image was. So they're kind of, you know, trying to make it look a little like it's a person. Now, we'll find out what the Federal Trade Commission has to say about this. But again, you know, Elon's got to figure out how to line his pocket somehow. When you buy something for $44 billion and then you destroy it. You know, now again, this is a guy who said that he bought Twitter for free speech because people should be able to speak freely. Evidently, the National Labor Relations Board has accused Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter, of illegally firing a woman in retaliation for her trying to organize workers in the workplace. And again, she's been fired for tweeting her disagreement with X's return to work policy. So again, retaliation by employers happens all the time, but the free speech, you know, champion, free speech for him, free speech for crazy people, but for working people, not so much. Not so much. Now, here's the thing. I used to love Twitter. I remember, and I go back to when I was sleeping on the Capitol floor in Wisconsin, when the uprising was going on in 2011, when you had 100,000 people in the Capitol, you know, just, and there was no news media there. And as I've said before, my favorite handwritten sign, and I wish I could find the picture of it, was it said, thanks CNN for telling me what's on Twitter. Because Twitter used to be the place where citizen journalists, while things are happening, were in real time with some due diligence and some honesty, you know, talking about what was going on. It was a real place that got information. So when bad things would happen, it would be the first place people went. You didn't switch on the local news. You went to Twitter, and you stayed on Twitter, you know, you know, following the hashtags of whatever it was, because you could trust the blue check marks, because there was some responsibility to having that blue check mark, because you could have it taken away for you know, doing the stuff that the blue check marks now are doing. And I find it really interesting that the guy who spent $44 billion, you know, to save free speech has turned it into, terrestrial radio constrains me in how I can frame this, but it's a giant pile of steaming, you know, gates. And the thing is, you know, you look at what's going on in Israel and in that part of the world, all of the...
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228 EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.